Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and when I was a kid, I went back and forth between wanting to be just like my dad when I grew up and not wanting to be at all like my dad when I grew up. Now, there wasn't anything wrong with my dad, really. He was a good dad. But there comes a point where you just want to be your own guy. Now, way into my grown-up years, I find myself saying things or doing things that are directly from my dad's playbook, the way he talks or the way he does things. And it's not just my dad, it's my mom, too. I don't do it on purpose. It's just the connection between us kind of doing it on its own. Our first story today talks about that connection, talks about us sometimes opening our mouth and finding the words of our folks coming out. It's a delightful little family story told by the great storyteller and musician Josh Goforth from North Carolina. He'll tell us a story that he calls What Can I Say? And if we're lucky, he'll follow it up with a little music, too. Here's Josh Goforth on The Appleseed.
Well, I want to tell you a little bit about my immediate family. I have to tell you that when I was a kid, I thought of myself as being more like my mother, because my mother's nickname in school was Perfect Peggy. Perfect Peggy does everything right. Perfect Peggy never gets into trouble. Perfect Peggy has the most perfect handwriting. Perfect Peggy is perfect in every way. So I thought, I'm more like Mom. Now, my sister is, so much more like my dad, because they're like bulls in a china shop, just no filter between their brain and their mouth. Whatever they think, they say, and they're just going to plow right through. A typical day at my home when I was a kid was my mother and I facing each other reading a book, and my dad and my sister yelling or singing at the top of their lungs, and me and my mother lowering our books and shaking our heads and lifting our books back. I was the son of Perfect Peggy, which means I was the golden child. Now, if my sister got into trouble, my mom would say, Sarah Elizabeth, what do you think you're doing? You know better than that. But if I got in trouble, my mom would be, now, sweetheart, you know how your sister is. Why would you sabotage us by getting her riled up? And that was typical at my household. Now, because I was the golden child, I was the one who could get away with everything. And, I was sneaky. And all of my plans usually involved my sister being the guinea pig for all of the things that I thought up. For instance, we had watched the Olympics, and we had seen people get into these little tight suits and dive headfirst down a chute of ice. Now, we had a little bit of snow, but you know, we didn't have enough snow to do that, but I got the bright idea that we could kind of create our own ice chute if we ran really hard and we could dive head first into this chair that we had, and we could stuff pillows into that chair. And if we just, you know, jumped head first in, why wasn't going to hurt us? Because our head would just hit the pillows. So we could just practice getting our start like those people we'd seen on TV. And I explained the plan to my sister, and she said, you go first. And I'm like, no, you go first. Okay. So she went to the back of the hall, and she got a running start, and she was just chugging along, and she dived head first into what she thought were the pillows, but what was the back of the hard wooden chair. And 2 hours later, we were in the hospital getting stitches for my sister's head. And I watched as my mom and my dad were standing there by the bed where my sister was. And they were saying, Sarah Elizabeth, go forth. How could you? You know better than that. Well, you know you were going to get hurt. You were jumping head first into a chair. And she's like, he did it. He told me to do it. And I said, I didn't do anything. And my mother said, I know you did it, Sarah. I know how you are. Don't you lie to me. I know you're the instigator of this. And then I kind of snuck off to Sarah's side and kind of whispered, and I went, what can I say?
And when I said that, my mother gave my dad the laser eye. She looked him right in the eye and gave him the meanest look ever. And my dad got this big grin on his face. And he started laughing. And I didn't understand what was going on. And she pointed right at my dad. And my dad said, "I didn't do it." And I never knew what that meant. Well, there was the time that we watched E.T. And I determined that we, just like E.T., could fly on the tricycle. And oh, I had my sister all set right on the back of the porch. And she had a little yellow tricycle. And she pedaled for the life of her. And she went sailing out over the edge of the porch. Landed head first right in the ditch. Back to the hospital we went. Same scenario. My mother said, "Sarah Elizabeth, how could you do this to this?" And my sister looks at me and she said, "You get away with everything." And I went, "What can I say?" And my mother again gave my dad the evilest look. And my dad just smiled and went like this. Well, several years passed and I started playing music on the road. And I wouldn't get to visit home as much as what I would like to. I was playing 200 dates a year on the road all over the world. But I would be able to get back every now and then, and we'd swap old stories. And me and my sister are so close now. And I, you know, still consider myself more like my mom. We're the reader type and kind of quiet at home. And Sarah and Dad, they're the loud ones. Well, my dad was diagnosed with Parkinson's and dementia. And I knew that I would have to take time off of the road and try to help take care of him. And so I started teaching some during the week at a local arts academy. That way I could be with Dad some. And Dad's illness progressed, and he had the illness for 10 years. And in the last year of his life, he was in a bed, and we had already placed him into a nursing facility because we couldn't give him the care that he needed. And I remember coming back home one weekend, and I just played the Grand Ole Opry. And when I walked into Dad's room, they were all by his bed, and my dad had kind of been in a coma-like state for a while, and Mom said, "Well, tell your dad about your weekend, you know. He can hear you. It'll perk him up. Just tell him about your weekend." So I told him about how I got to get on the stage right where Hank Williams had stood and where Dolly Parton had stood and Loretta Lynn. And I told him, I said, "Dad," I said, "when I played that first fiddle note during my sound check, my knees went weak." You know, and I could feel that my dad was there with me. I knew he could hear what I was saying. And my sister pops up and she said, "You get to go everywhere. You get to do all the fun. And what am I doing? I'm just stuck here right here in Madison County doing nothing. You get to do everything." And I went, "What can I say?" And my dad's eyes fluttered and a smile came up on his face. And my mom just looked at him and shook her head. And I never knew what that was about until about a month later. And my dad was at the end. And we were all there with Dad, and we were holding his hand, and it was a sweet moment. And I was happy that I got to be there in that peaceful moment as my dad was able to pass over. And it was a relief for him because he was out of his pain, and it was a relief for us because he was out of his pain. And the next day, we'd went to the funeral home to make the arrangements, and we went home that afternoon, and we wanted to go through all the old photographs of my dad that we had. And we started going through these photograph books. And there was, you know, pictures of Dad, you know, at the beach, you know, with his big sun hat on, with a grin on his face, with his thumb up like this. And all of us just kind of smiling, looking up at him. And then there was the picture of us going to Pigeon Forge and seeing all the old antique cars. And my dad doing the same exact pose. That was his favorite pose. Thumb up, you know, with a big grin on his face. And then we started going through his old yearbooks. And we looked, and in the yearbook for his senior year, there were all these signatures in it, like, "Oh, it was, you know, have a great year and good luck in life," and, you know, all these things that you say in your yearbook to other people. And I started flipping the pages, and there in the back was the most perfect handwriting you've ever seen. The perfect script of Perfect Peggy, who we all knew. And it said, "Keith. My dad's name. I love you more and more every day. I want to spend the rest of my life with you." And it went on and on. And of course, you know, as a kid, you're like, "Bleh."
And then it said, love, Peggy, perfect P, perfect E, two G's with perfect loops and a Y. P.S. Drop your habit of saying, what can I say? My dad had never said that. But I, as a child, all the way through adulthood, had used that phrase over, and I don't ever remember him saying it. And it was in that very moment that I realized that I was more like my dad than I knew. And I think all of us men can attest that there comes a day in our life where we do something, and then we say to ourselves, wait a minute, that was Dad. And I have to say that it was so great living through those old memories, looking through those photograph books of my dad. And so I'd like to sing this song that I think about every time I think about that moment when I realized that I was more like my dad than I thought. Albums of faded photographs remind me of the many times we shared. Smiling at me from the pages of the past are likenesses of friends who kindly care. And even though I roam far away from home, somehow I hear your voice beyond the stillness, calling to me with a tender melody. I'm waltzing with a memory of you. Linger in my mind, half-remembered scenes of yesterday, stirring up feelings I thought I'd left behind, and words I never had the chance to say. And even though I roam far away from home, somehow I hear your voice beyond the stillness, a calling to me with a tender melody. I'm waltzing with the memory of you. The memory of you.
Josh Goforth with his beautiful song, Waltzing with a Memory of You, as a follow-up to a story he calls What Can I Say? There's something really interesting in that dance we do between the individual, one-of-a-kind person we want to be and the way we sometimes preserve the generations that came before us in our manner of speech, our way of doing things, our way of interacting with other people, whether we mean to or not. And listening to Josh tell his story brought on kind of an unusual memory for me. I'll try to share it. When I was just starting to get interested in sharing stories and singing songs on stage for audiences of people outside my own family, an unusual thing happened, a thing that happens to a lot of people who present things on stage. They find themselves inhabiting a kind of
persona, a sort of stage personality that's mostly them, but is a little more, stagey than they are offstage, right? That happened to me too. And as I listened to myself tell stories and sing songs on stage in those early years, I could hear myself being mostly myself, but something else too. And it took me a long time to figure out what was influencing that stage version of myself. There were probably a lot of things. But one day, an old friend of mine posted to social media an old picture of her dad singing with his barbershop quartet. Her dad had been a teacher at my elementary school. And the other members of the quartet worked at my elementary school, too. They were our principal, our custodian, and our speech therapist. The Elementary Four, they called themselves. And they sang at school assemblies and parent nights and stuff like that. And the teacher, Mr. Thompson, my friend's dad, also had a ventriloquist dummy named Elwood. And with that dummy, he'd tell jokes and MC class programs and all sorts of stuff. And darned if in that photo posted to social media by my friend, I didn't see a little of Mr. Thompson in that developing stage persona of mine. Not on purpose, of course, and not even anything really noticeable, just the memory of the way I might turn a phrase or announce the next song or, as visible in the photo, the way I held my head and my hands as I sang. But it was certainly there. Mr. Thompson has passed away now. And there are lots of ways his community has remembered him, ways more significant than the tiny and subtle ways I seem to have adopted at least part of his stage persona. But it was cool for me to see someone I admired made manifest, even to a tiny little degree, in my own way of being. We are, as it turns out, the sum of all the people who have influenced us. And that's where Josh's story took me. Where did the story take you? And who will you take along?
It'll have us all climbing that family tree when we share together the apple seed.
There's a lot coming up, but I want to take just a moment and tell you about another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show. Now, life can be stressful, but Lisa Valentine Clark, the host of The Lisa Show, along with her guests and her unique council of moms, provide a positive and empowering look at all kinds of challenges. They tackle them head on, sharing experiences, offering suggestions on how we can handle relationships and health and technology and body image and family, all kinds of stuff. And Lisa is a great person to hang out with. The Lisa Show, you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio.
So if you're hungry for stories, come and feed from the fruit of the tree of the apple seed.
It's such a pleasure to be with you today on The Apple Seed. A moment ago, you heard a story from Josh Goforth, a story about how some of the things your parents do and say shows up in the way you do things and say things. Keeping track of the relationship between one generation and another is important, and important connections can sometimes show up in tiny ways. Like in this story from the L.A. storyteller Antonio Sacre. Now, Antonio is a dad. How might Antonio's kids feel connected to their dad when they hear that, just like them, he had a favorite teddy bear when he was a kid? That's what this story is for. It's called My Cool Teddy. Here's Antonio Sacre on The Appleseed.
When I was about a little baby, my mom and dad gave me a teddy bear. I didn't know, and they didn't know at the time, that that would be my teddy bear. I remember when my children were younger, of all of the stuffies and loveys and bears they had, which is the one that they would hold on to? Which is the one they would sleep with? Well, that teddy bear was the one that I would sleep with. And within weeks of getting that teddy bear, every night, it had to be underneath my arm. My mom would then tuck me into bed. She would give me a kiss on the right cheek, and I would go to sleep. Now, as I grew older, I still sometimes slept with that teddy bear, but my mom always kissed me on the right cheek. I'd say, "Mom, why do you kiss me on the right cheek?" She says, "Oh, when you were younger, you didn't know your difference between your right hand and your left. So I would kiss you on your right cheek, and that's how you knew." And I thought about that when I was in kindergarten. I would think, the teacher says, "Go to the right. My mom kissed me here. That's my right." And that's how I knew. But I'd be like, "Mom, I'm 15. I now know my difference between right and left." She goes, "It's a tradition. I'm going to kiss you right there anyway." And she always does, right there on the right cheek. Well, she would tuck me into bed, tuck Teddy under, give me a kiss on the right cheek, and I would go to sleep. And one of my earliest memories was about 2.5 or 3 years old, when my mom tucked me into bed and Teddy was not there. And I panicked. My mom said, "Don't worry. It's been raining all day. We didn't go anywhere. You had Teddy this morning." "You're right, Mom, I did." She says, "So he's in the house. Let's just look for him." So we looked underneath my bed, and underneath my bed, do you know what we saw? Some slippers. We went into the closet, and no Teddy in the closet. We went into the bathroom, pulled back the shower curtain, and in the tub was my rubber ducky. But no Teddy. And now I started to cry. She says, "Honey, we haven't searched the whole house. We're going to search the whole house." Underneath the table, macaroni and cheese. In the couch cushions. Who has lost something in the couch cushions? And no Teddy, but we did find 39 cents. Who has found money in the couch cushions? But no Teddy. And now I was an inconsolable 2.5-year-old, and my mom says, "Don't worry. Your dad's coming home soon from work. He'll help you find it." "All right, Mom." And sure enough, a few minutes later, my dad comes in, and when he saw me still awake, at first he was mad. And I'll translate if you don't speak Spanish. He's, "Oye, ¿qué estás pasando así? ¿Por qué no estás durmiendo en la cama? Why aren't you asleep yet?" And I said, "Papá, perdí mi osito." He said, "Oh, perdiste tu osito. No te preocupes, porque aquí está papá." He said, "Your dad is here, and we're going to find Teddy." "Okay, papá." He says, "Lo que pasa es que tenemos que mirar con los ojos abiertos." We need to look with our eyes open. "Oh, Dad, that's a good idea. Wait, we've been looking with our eyes open." He says, "Well, have you been looking with your eyes muy, muy, muy abiertos?" "Oh, no, papá, no muy, muy, muy abiertos." So we look with our eyes very, very, very open, under all the same places, with all the same results. The slippers, the rubber ducky, the macaroni and cheese, and there was still miraculously more money in the couch, but no Teddy. And now I started to cry, and my dad said, "Ay, mijito. De vez en cuando viene momento cuando un niño hay que dormir sin su osito." He said, "There comes a day in the life of every young boy where he has to go to sleep without his teddy bear." I said, "I know, Dad, but today is not that day." He said, "Yes, it is." "No, it's not." "Yes, it is." "No, it's not." And my mom did what my wife does to me. My mom put her hand on my dad's shoulder. She said, "Respira, papá. Just breathe." And my dad said, "Bueno, mijito, vamos a mirar con los ojos muy, 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 muy abiertos." "That'll work, papá. If we have our eyes really, really, really open, we'll find Teddy this time for sure." And we searched the house again with the same result. And now a boy past bedtime and a frustrated dad from Cuba. And my dad is just yelling and screaming. And he's kind of, and my mom says, "Just breathe." And my dad goes, she said, "Breathe for real, papá. De todos modos, vamos a tomar un vaso de leche. Let's go get a glass of milk." "I don't want milk. I just want Teddy." "You're going to have milk." "No, I'm not." "Yes, you are." "No, I'm not." "Breathe, papá." Oh, he's so mad. "De todos modos, I'm going to get milk." He goes to the fridge, opens up the fridge, and shuts the door. "Are you sure you don't want a glass of milk?" "I don't want milk. I just want Teddy." My mom looks into the fridge. "Are you sure you're sure you don't want a glass of milk?" "I don't want milk. I just..." "Hey," I ran to the fridge. I opened up the fridge, and there, propped up on the shelf, was my Teddy. I said, "Teddy, what are you doing in there?" And do you know what he said? Nothing, because Teddies don't talk. But I grabbed him. I said, "I know what happened. I went to get a snack. I put you in there. I got the snack. I left you. I'm sorry, Teddy." And I hugged him. My mom breathed a sigh of relief. My dad breathed a sigh of relief. They both tucked me into bed. They both gave me a kiss on the right cheek and tucked Clyde, my teddy bear, underneath my arm. And the next night, my mom tucked me into bed. There was my teddy. She gave me a kiss on the right cheek, and I started to cry. She said, "What's the matter, honey? He's not cold. Could you please put him in the fridge and make him cold?" And my mom had to put Teddy in the fridge every night so I could go to sleep with my cool Teddy.
That was My Cool Teddy by Antonio Sacre, recorded right here in the Appleseed studio. Thanks for joining us on the Appleseed today. What are some of the things you notice that you do or say in the same way as your parents or grandparents or someone else important in your life? What are some of the stories you're telling around the dinner table or the living room that help you know that one generation understands another? We hope you'll compare notes with your family members. After all, at the Appleseed, we believe that sharing and listening to great stories can change your family's world.
The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, and Brian Tanner. Our audio engineers are Ashton Parkinson and DJ Cromarty. The rest of the Appleseed team, Kira Van Dam, Kelly Wermeister, Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. Hey, if you like today's podcast, subscribe, rate us, leave us a review, and tell your friends. That's how the podcast grows. We also love to receive emails. Email us at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. Your thoughts and comments help us shape the future of the Appleseed. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.